Hi, my name is Brendan Malone and you're listening to The Dispatches, the podcast that strives to cut through all the noise in order to challenge the popular narratives of the day with some good old-fashioned contrarian thinking. You might not always agree, but at least you'll be taking a deeper look at the world around you. Hi everybody, welcome along to another episode of The Dispatches. It's great to be back with you again. If you're new here and you haven't already subscribed to this podcast, then why not hit that little subscribe or follow button? And if you've been tuning in for a while and you're enjoying the content, then please give us a rating. So if your platform allows you to give us a few stars, the more the merrier, or perhaps even a written comment or two about what you like about the podcast, all of that really, really helps. And as an added bonus, if you want to get access to an extra episode of The Dispatches every single week that is available only to our patrons, all you have to do is become a patron of Left Foot Media at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. The link is in the show notes. And with a contribution of $5 or more per month, that's the price of a cup of coffee, then you get access to an extra 4 or 5 episodes of The Dispatches every single month that we make available exclusively to our patron supporters. So that's a great bonus. By the way, if you just want to make a one-off contribution for today's episode, you can also do that. There's a link in the show notes for that as well. Last but not least, and I'm going to stop harping on about this after this week, don't forget to go and check out our new website. It's watchlfm.com. That's W-A-T-C-H, watchlfm.com. And while you're there, leave your email address in the email sign-up form on the homepage. Now, I promise you, we don't send out spam. We don't share your email address. We don't constantly email you out updates. That list is there so that just in case in this highly censorious environment we find ourselves booted off one of the big platforms, we can let you know quickly and easily about how you can continue to access the content that we're putting out there. Right, let's jump into today's episode. And I should start by saying that I was not planning today's episode to be about this topic. Again, we're speaking about COVID-19 related matters, and I wasn't planning at all to touch on what we're going to talk about today. I had a completely different topic and show notes and everything all planned and prepared, which we will talk about later this week, fingers crossed. But I just thought this was important enough and serious enough. I was sent a link this morning about a brand new article that has just been published, and I felt it was important enough to actually to dedicate a show to talking about this because the implications of it could be quite serious. And so the topic of today's conversation was data falsified in the Pfizer vaccine trials? Now, the reason I'm asking that question, before you sort of all run off panicking and thinking, oh my gosh, has he wandered off into conspiracy territory land? Has he been reading all the, you know, the worst possible websites? Let me explain to you why I felt this was important. This is an article that has just been published, dated the 2nd of November 2021, and remember this is from the UK, in the British Medical Journal. So this is not tinfoil hats are us. This is not conspiracytheory.com. This is not microchip Bill Gates vaccines are evil.org. This is the British Medical Journal. And they have clearly done their research, as you will see when we read this article. What I'm going to do today in this episode is I'm going to read to you the article in its entirety. I'm not going to translate it in any way. I'm going to read to you the content because I want to be very clear, and I want you to see that I am not retelling the story or exaggerating or adding things in. I am going to read you exactly what the British Medical Journal have reported, and I think that you'll see that the scope and the quality of their investigation here is good and proper and sound. It's not he said, she said stuff. And the fact that the British Medical Journal consider this reliable and credible enough to publish, I think is something that should give all people of goodwill who are prudent and who care about these issues appropriate caution to sit up and say, hold on, we need to take a bit of a deeper look at this and ask ourselves what's actually going on here, because this really does matter. Now, I know that it's uncomfortable at the best of times to ask these sorts of questions because we're now starting to probe into territory about, well, should this drug have been released onto the market? Was it safe enough to actually be utilised in the way that we're utilising it? Should we be compelling people to take this particular medical therapy in light of this particular evidence that's now come to light? And those are uncomfortable questions to ask at the best of times. They are even harder to examine honestly when you've got a pandemic and there's fear and there's no other options seemingly on the table to address the crisis. And you've got a lot of people now who have actually utilized this therapy around the world. You've got compulsion of people going on, you know, all sorts of things happening like that. I think it's even harder, but we must, I think, examine, and we must, I think, for the sake of truth and for the sake of really what's at stake here and what's gone on, I think it's absolutely important that we have the courage to examine these issues honestly and be willing to go where they might lead us. And as you'll see from this article, there is a question at the end of all this. It's not like, you know, here's what this says and we should definitely do this following course of action. But what it does do is it actually raises a very serious issue that requires a lot more, and I think a lot more serious investigation. So let me read to you from this article. I'll post a link as well in the show notes so that you can actually read the article for yourself and see that I have not fabricated anything. I have not left anything out. I have not reinterpreted data to suit an agenda or anything like that. I'm just reporting exactly what the British Medical Journal have said here. So the title of this article is "Researcher Blows the Whistle on Data Integrity Issues in Pfizer's Vaccine Trial." And as I've already said, this is the British Medical Journal, and the date of publication is the 2nd of November 2021. Revelations of poor practices at a contract research company helping to carry out Pfizer's pivotal COVID-19 vaccine trial raise questions about data integrity and regulatory oversight, Paul D. Thacker reports. In autumn 2020, Pfizer's chairman and chief executive, Albert Bourla, released an open letter to the billions of people around the world who were investing their hopes in a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine to end the pandemic. As I've said before, we are operating at the speed of science, Bourla wrote, explaining to the public when they could expect a Pfizer vaccine to be authorized in the United States. But for researchers who were testing Pfizer's vaccine at several sites in Texas during that autumn, speed may have come at the cost of data integrity and patient safety. A regional director who was employed at the research organisation Ventavia Research Group has told the British Medical Journal that the company falsified data, unblinded patients, employed inadequately trained vaccinators, and was slow to follow up on adverse events reported in Pfizer's pivotal Phase 3 trial. Staff who conducted quality control checks were overwhelmed by the volume of problems they were finding. After repeatedly notifying Ventavia of these problems, the regional director, Brooke Jackson, emailed a complaint to the US Food and Drug Administration, the FDA. Ventavia fired her later that same day. Jackson has provided the British Medical Journal with dozens of internal company documents, photos, audio recordings, and emails. On its website, Ventavia calls itself the largest privately owned clinical research company in Texas and lists many awards it has won for its contract work. But Jackson has told the British Medical Journal that during the 2 weeks she was employed at Ventavia in September 2020, she repeatedly informed her superiors of poor laboratory management, patient safety concerns, and data integrity issues. Jackson was a trained clinical trial auditor who previously held a director of operations position and came to Ventavia with more than 15 years' experience in clinical research coordination and management. So this is not someone This is me speaking, by the way, not the article. So this is not someone who is inexperienced, who is taking things lightly. So you see that you've got experience here, and also there's an abundance of evidence that she has provided to the British Medical Journal relating to what was going on there. Exasperated that Ventavia was not dealing with the problems, Jackson documented several matters late one night, taking photos on her mobile phone. One photo provided to the British Medical Journal showed needles discarded in a plastic biohazard bag instead of a sharps container box. Another showed vaccine packaging materials with trial participants' identification numbers written on them left out in the open, potentially unblinding participants. Ventavia executives later questioned Jackson for taking the photos. Early and inadvertent unblinding may have occurred on a far wider scale. According to the trial's design, unblinded staff were responsible for preparing and administering the study drug, Pfizer's vaccine or a placebo. This was to be done to preserve the blinding of trial participants and all other site staff, including the principal investigator. However, at Ventavia, Jackson told the British Medical Journal that drug assignment confirmation printouts were being left in participants' charts, accessible to blinded personnel. As a corrective action taken in September, 2 months into trial recruitment, and with around 1,000 participants already enrolled, quality assurance checklists were updated with instructions for staff to remove drug assignments from charts. In a recording of a meeting in late September 2020 between Jackson and two directors, a Ventavia executive can be heard explaining that the company wasn't able to quantify the types and number of errors they were finding when examining the trial paperwork for quality control. In my mind, it's something new every day, a Ventavia executive says. We know that it's significant, quote unquote. Ventavia was not keeping up with data entry queries, shows an email sent by ICON, the contract research organization with which Pfizer partnered on the trial. ICON reminded Ventavia in a September 2020 email, "The expectation for this study is that all queries are addressed within 24 hours, quote unquote. ICON then highlighted over 100 outstanding queries older than 3 days in yellow. Examples included two individuals for which subject has reported with severe symptoms / reactions. Per protocol, subjects experiencing grade 3 local reactions should be contacted. Please confirm if an unplanned contact was made and update the corresponding form as appropriate," quote unquote. According to the trial protocol, a telephone contact should have occurred to ascertain further details and determine whether a site visit is clinically indicated, quote unquote. Documents show that problems had been going on for weeks. In a list of quote unquote action items circulated among Ventavia leaders in early August 2020, shortly after the trial began and before Jackson's hiring, a Ventavia executive identified three site staff members with whom to, quote unquote, go over e-diary issue / falsifying data, etc., end quote. One of them was, quote unquote, verbally counseled for changing data and not noting late entry, end quote, a note indicates. At several points during the late September meeting, Jackson and the Ventavia executives discussed the possibility of the FDA showing up for an inspection. And in parentheses there it says box one, and we'll read box one in just a minute. It's just a little side note about FDA oversight. "We're going to get some kind of letter of information at least when the FDA gets here, know it," quote unquote, an executive stated. Now let's read box one, which is titled "A History of Lax Oversight." "When it comes to the FDA and clinical trials, Elizabeth Wokner, President of Citizens for Responsible Care and Research Incorporated, CIRCARE, says the agency's oversight capacity is severely under-resourced. If the FDA receives a complaint about a clinical trial, she says the agency rarely has the staff available to show up and inspect, and sometimes oversight occurs too late. In one example, CIRCARE and the US consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen, along with dozens of public health experts, filed a detailed complaint in July 2018 with the FDA about a clinical trial that failed to comply with regulations for the protection of human participants. 9 months later, in April 2019, an FDA investigator inspected the clinical site. In May this year, the FDA sent the trialist a warning letter that substantiated many of the claims in the complaints list. It said, quote unquote, "It appears that you did not adhere to the applicable statutory requirements and FDA regulations governing the conduct of clinical investigations and the protection of human subjects." And it's what's so astounding, by the way, this is me again, what's so astounding to me about that is that that seems like a pretty serious complaint to take your time on, that not protecting your human subjects. I would have thought isn't that sort of the pinnacle of what you want to be regulating and keeping oversight? First and foremost, it's about the people involved in the trials, that their protection is being regarded highly and properly cared for and catered to. I would have thought that would have required and prompted a much faster reaction. There's just a complete lack of oversight of contract research organisations and independent clinical research facilities, says Jill Fisher, professor of social medicine at the University of North Carolina School of Medicine and author of Medical Research for Hire, The Political Economy of Pharmaceutical Clinical Trials. A former Ventavia employee told the British Medical Journal that the company was nervous and expecting a federal audit of its Pfizer vaccine trial. "People working in clinical trials are terrified of FDA audits," Jill Fisher told the British Medical Journal, but added that the agency really does anything other than inspect paperwork, usually months after a trial has ended. "I don't know why they're so afraid of them," she said. But she said she was surprised that the agency failed to inspect Ventavia after an employee had filed a complaint. "You would think if there's a specific and credible complaint that they would have to investigate that," Fisher said. In 2007, the Department of Health and Human Services Office of the Inspector General released a report on FDA's oversight of clinical trials conducted between 2000 and 2005. The report found that the FDA inspected only 1% of clinical trial sites. Inspections carried out by the FDA's Vaccines and Biologics branch have been decreasing in recent years, with just 50 conducted in the 2020 fiscal year. Right, back to the main body of the article. And by the way, we're about 50% through now. The next morning, 25th of September 2020, Jackson called the FDA to warn about unsound practices in Pfizer's clinical trial at Ventavia. She then reported her concerns in an email to the agency. In the afternoon, Ventavia fired Jackson, deemed, quote-unquote, "not a good fit," according to her separation letter. Now, sure, we all know that there are prickly personalities and they can be, quote-unquote, not a good fit, but we also all know that when you've got a situation of someone raising serious safety concerns at such a pivotal moment as a vaccine in the middle of a pandemic and sort of trials relating to that, you know, those things are pretty serious. And when people who are raising those concerns, regardless of whether they're prickly people or not, are immediately finding themselves being fired, that is not a good sign. We know that from history, that these are not healthy behaviours of transparent companies who are willing to acknowledge problems and adequately address them. Jackson told the British Medical Journal it was the first time she had been fired in her 20-year career in research. In her 25 September email to the FDA, Jackson wrote that Ventavia had enrolled more than 1,000 participants at 3 sites. The full trial, registered under NCT 04368728, enrolled around 44,000 participants across 153 sites that included numerous commercial companies and academic centres. She then listed a dozen concerns she had witnessed, including participants placed in a hallway after injection and not being monitored by clinical staff, lack of timely follow-up of patients who experienced adverse events, protocol deviations not being reported, vaccines not being stored at proper temperatures, mislabeled laboratory specimens, and targeting of Ventavia staff for reporting these types of problems. Within hours, Jackson received an email from the FDA thanking her for her concerns and notifying her that the FDA could not comment on any investigation that might result. A few days later, Jackson received a call from an FDA inspector to discuss her report, but was told that no further information could be provided. She heard nothing further in relation to her report. Again, that does not inspire a lot of confidence that it seemed to have come to a whopping great dead end at that point. In Pfizer's briefing document submitted to an FDA advisory committee meeting held on the 10th of December 2020 to discuss Pfizer's application for emergency use authorization of its COVID-19 vaccine, the company made no mention of problems at the Ventavia site. The next day, the FDA issued the authorization of the vaccine. Again, that is not a healthy sign that no mention appears, even if they want to say, look, we had some issues early on, but don't worry, we've fixed the problems, just no mention. In August this year, after the full approval of Pfizer's vaccine, oh, by the way, I think I'm going to start this paragraph again because I think this is actually one of the most important paragraphs in this whole article. So have a listen to this carefully. In August this year, after the full approval of Pfizer's vaccine, the FDA published a summary of its inspections of the company's pivotal trial. 9 of the trial's 153 sites were inspected. 9. Just 9. That's not even 10% of the sites. Well, in fact, what is it? It's not even 5% of the sites, is it? Ventavia's sites were not listed among the 9. Remember that again. Ventavia's sites were not listed among the 9. And no inspections of sites where adults were recruited took place in the 8 months after the December 2020 emergency authorization. The FDA's inspection officer noted, quote unquote, the data integrity and verification portion of the BIMO, bioresearch monitoring, inspections were limited because the study was ongoing and the data required for verification and comparison were not yet available to the IND, which is investigational new drug, end quote. We'll come back to those points at the end when I offer a few quick notes of commentary. Here's the last couple of paragraphs. In recent months, Jackson has reconnected with several former Ventavia employees who all left or were fired from the company. One of them was one of the officials who had taken part in the late September meeting. In a text message sent in June, the former official apologized, saying that, quote unquote, everything that you complained about was spot on, end quote. Two former Ventavia employees spoke to the British Medical Journal anonymously for fear of reprisal and loss of job prospects in the tightly knit research community. That sentence there, by the way, should immediately send shivers down our spines. That at such a pivotal moment, in the middle of a pandemic where all these pressures are on, these extraordinary pressures where safety and concerns and oversight can be very easily corrupted for utilitarian and you know, sort of political expediency, for revenue, profit motives, etc., that people are saying things like that, that they don't want to speak and say their names out loud because for speaking up about safety concerns, they are fearful that they will lose their ability to actually work in this industry. That is not healthy at all. It is absolutely unhealthy. There is no way that that can be justified or should be happening, where there is that degree of secrecy and that degree of protection around internal secrecy, that is not a healthy thing. It just is not. Let me carry on with the article. Both confirmed broad aspects of Jackson's complaint. One said that she had worked on over four dozen clinical trials in her career, including many large trials, but had never experienced such a quote-unquote helter-skelter work environment as with Ventavia on Pfizer's trial. I've never had to do what they were asking me to do, ever, she told the British Medical Journal. It just seemed like something a little different from normal, the things that were allowed and expected. End quote. She added that during her time at Ventavia, the company expected a federal audit, but that this never came. After Jackson left the company, problems persisted at Ventavia, this employee said. In several cases, Ventavia lacked enough employees to swab all trial participants who reported COVID-like symptoms to test for infection. Laboratory-confirmed symptomatic COVID-19 was the trial's primary endpoint, the employee noted. So let's just go back. This is important. And I'll quote you that again. In several cases, Ventavia lacked enough employees to swab all trial participants who reported COVID-like symptoms to test for infection. Laboratory-confirmed symptomatic COVID-19 was the trial's primary endpoint. And yet that wasn't even being done. An FDA review memorandum released in August this year states that across the full trial, swabs were not taken from 477 people with suspected cases of symptomatic COVID-19. I don't think it was good, clean data, quote unquote, the employee said of the data Ventavia generated for the Pfizer trial. It's a crazy mess, quote unquote. A second employee also described an environment at Ventavia unlike any she had experienced in her 20 years doing research. She told the British Medical Journal that shortly after Ventavia fired Jackson, Pfizer was notified of problems at Ventavia with the vaccine trial and that an audit took place. Since Jackson reported problems with Ventavia to the FDA in September 2020, Pfizer has hired Ventavia as a research subcontractor on four other vaccine clinical trials, and those are COVID-19 vaccine in children and young adults, pregnant women, and a booster dose, as well as an RSV vaccine trial. The Advisory Committee for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is set to discuss the COVID-19 pediatric vaccine trial on the 2nd of November. And that is where the article ends. And, I hope you can understand why I felt this was important enough to actually comment on today and make a subject of a podcast. This is something I believe that needs to be taken extremely seriously, and there needs to be urgent and more detailed investigation about all of the implications for this. So I took a couple of notes when I first read that article this morning. A couple of things stuck out to me. One is you've got experienced researchers who are saying this isn't normal. What they experienced there wasn't normal. And that sort of raises the question about what was this happening in other places too, and was it being caused by the sheer speed and panic which was driving the attempts to try and find a medical solution to the COVID-19 crisis? And I mean, it seems probably pretty logical that yes, that there was corners were. Would you say corners were cut, or things were rushed, or pressure was put on because of the nature of what was going on? But as you've heard, these people are saying with experience, this isn't normal. What happened here is not normal. So it's not just sort of minor little variations on a theme here. It's not, when you do this sort of research, there's a lot of pressure goes on. This is not normal behaviours. The second thing that really stuck out to me and I wrote a note about was the implications around the FDA oversight and the issues pertaining to that. So as this article in the British Medical Journal, again, let me remind you, this is the British Medical Journal. This is not Tinfoil Hats R Us. This is the British Medical Journal. And I think that this has all the hallmarks of good quality investigative journalism. I mean, I'm assuming that these journalists have told the truth here, right? That they've got multiple sources, they've got evidence, material evidence to back up the claims. They've gone and done some further investigation on this. This looks like a very serious issue that is absolutely in the public interest and has been well examined in this particular article. And as this article points out, only 9 of the 153 sites that were involved in this Pfizer trial were inspected. Now, to me, I was really surprised to read that. That's, as I said, that's less than 5% of the sites, right, have actually been inspected. Now, I could have understood if they'd said, well, we couldn't investigate every single site, but I mean, my initial assumption would be that in a time of pandemic with a novel virus and you're doing safety trials on a potential therapeutic to actually address this issue, that you would inspect every single site because you'd want A-grade top quality safety data and statistical data and information coming out of those sites. This is just too serious to cut corners and muck around with, and there's such huge profit motives and political fear and all sorts of stuff driving people to cut corners and to rush things. So you'd want to do this all well above board and by the book. I think that, for me, I think if I was in government, that's what I would expect as the bare minimum. However, maybe there are reasons why people say, well, that's over the top. I don't think it is, but maybe some people think it is. I would have expected, though, more than 5% of the trial sites to be inspected. I would have expected a lot higher than that. And so only 9 out of 153, and really importantly, the Ventavia site is not listed as one of those inspection sites. Now, that is really surprising when you consider that that specific organization was actually subject to a complaint that relates to the reliability of the findings of this research. And then there's also the fact that Ventavia is now involved in other research as well, that Pfizer is still contracting with them. I would assume that Pfizer would know that they've been the subject of an FDA complaint. And they seem comfortable to keep using them. All of this raises some pretty big questions, I think, that do demand further investigation. And I think this is really, really serious. So what are the implications for all of this? Well, I think at this stage it's uncertain. Look, I'm not a medical researcher, so I don't know for certain whether if you've got a trial where, what is it, 1,000 people involved in this trial of 44,000, so what's that? That's what's over 2% of your trial group. The data for over 2% of them has been corrupted, and there's serious concerns about the reliability of all of that data. I don't know. Does that have implications? Does that mean that the whole trial is now is cast in doubt? I mean, I'm not an expert researcher, but if I understand scientific research correctly and the handling of statistical data, you've got to be really, really cautious with that. You've got to take extreme care because if I understand things, even little corruptions can have very big ramifications for outcomes. It's not just a matter of saying, oh, well, it's okay, you know, 97% of the rest of it was fine. And that's assuming that the other 97% of the trial sites have not been corrupted in any other way themselves. But 97% of the rest of the subjects, their data is totally fine. But does that mean that the 2% and a bit that you had that's not fine, that's compromised, that you can just ignore that and carry on as is? I would have thought that that would have statistical implications because the trial is conducted as a whole. It's not just groups of individuals. It's all of those individuals are part of the whole trial, and that the whole trial would have a proper protocol and a design, and that should be followed, and that you start with a large group and then you follow that large group. And if you've got compromise in that group, there's going to be problems, and that needs to be accounted for. And there's no indication that that has actually happened here. So this is, I think, something that is definitely warrants further investigation. I mean, my absolute hope, and I'm really serious about this, is that this all comes to nothing. That you know, somehow a bullet was dodged here, if you like. And even if it is revealed that this was really important, and the product was rushed onto the market, my hope against all hopes, I guess you'd say, is that hope of all hopes is that this doesn't have serious ramifications for the people who have already used the Pfizer vaccine. I've got a lot of friends and family in that group, and I don't wish ill on anyone who's used it, and certainly not my friends and family. I want them to have the best outcome. They've undertaken a therapy that they were told was absolutely safe, and the data was robust and reliable. And I think they have every right to sort of now be raising questions and saying, well, hold on, was it? What, you know, did you tell us? Did you bother to actually check fully? What sort of oversight was actually happening here? And these are big and important questions. By the way, if it does turn out that there are some big safety issues here, and the end result of this is just the beginning of something more, which leads us to a place where it is revealed that the vaccine should have never been, or this Pfizer therapy should have never been released onto the market because of a lack of robust, you know, clinical and safety data, then, you know, I'm certainly not going to be jumping up and down and gloating about that. That's not a good thing. That's a really bad thing. And I would just say to anyone who's listening who might be tempted to do this, I don't imagine anybody would be, but just in case, there's no way any judgments should be passed on those people who took the vaccine, if this does turn out to be the case. Because those people acted in good faith based on the best available information that was given to them in a climate of huge politicization and fear. And I can totally understand someone in that situation weighing everything up and making what they think is the best choice to make in this situation, you know, the least of a whole lot of bad choices in front of them. And there's no way that they should be judged or ridiculed or unfairly maligned for making that decision. However, there are definitely questions that need to be asked of our lawmakers and those who promoted and pushed this, if this does turn out to be a major issue. The implications for this, though, are very clear when it comes to sort of the other things that we're grappling with around vaccines, and particularly in this country here in New Zealand. And this is something I've been saying from the very beginning, is that wherever there is risk, there must not be compulsion. And there is risk here. There is uncertainty. And this, again, points to the fact that there are some big questions here. And so in a situation like that, no one should be compelled. No one should be threatened with the loss of a job if they don't take a medical therapy, which we now know, according to the British Medical Journal, let me say that again, the British Medical Journal, where there was some serious compromise during the clinical trial process. This is serious. This really matters. And it is absolutely prudent, I think, and this has been my position from the very beginning. We are talking here about huge political forces. We are talking about market forces, about profit motives that are off the chart. And to suggest that all of those things in a time of fear and in a time of crisis have no bearing at all on cutting corners or bad decision making, that every decision is going to be good, sound, and absolutely prudent in that sort of environment, I don't think that that's actually a prudent or wise approach to take. I think that in actual fact, life experience and history and basic wisdom would tell us that in that sort of climate, the risks of bad decision making are heightened, and so we just need to take a little bit more caution. And so there should be no recrimination of anybody who wants to take that extra caution in such a climate. This is one of the things I think that's so good about the sort of the Burkean conservative approach to politics and to society, is that it really has a vision where it's not utopian at all. It avoids utopianism, but at the same time, it recognizes that there are the threat of power to little people is actually quite serious. And whether that be the excessive force used by a government, so power wielded by the state, or whether that be excessive power wielded by big corporates or business owners or whatever it might be, institutions, that basically that you've got to be moral in the way you structure society and the way things are done, so that you ensure that the little person has every fighting chance against those kind of risks, and every fighting chance that we act in such a way as to, as much as possible, because it's not utopianism, but as much as possible to mitigate those kinds of risks. And one way that we're not mitigating that risk at the moment is by compelling people, by forcing people to have these vaccinations in the current context. That shouldn't be happening. That's not a government acting in the best interests of the little people. That's not a government giving the little person every fighting chance to navigate these risks. What that is a government giving far too much power, or wielding it itself and giving far too much power to other interests. And it's exposing the little ordinary everyday people like you and me to risks that we really shouldn't be exposed to. And that's not a good thing. Like I said, I really hope nothing more serious comes of this, but let's be frank, this definitely demands further investigation, and it's absolutely as uncomfortable and as challenging as that might be. We need to actually really confront this head on and ask the questions and probe deeper about this and about what exactly has gone on here and how widespread this may or may not actually be. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Dispatches. Don't forget, if you want that extra episode every single week, patron-only episode, $5 or more per month is all it takes at patreon.com/leftfootmedia, and you'll get an extra 4 or 5 episodes of the podcast every single month. The link for that is in the show notes, and also there's a link for this British Medical Journal article as well. Don't forget, live by goodness, truth and beauty, not by lies. And I will see you next time on The Dispatches. The Dispatches podcast is a production of Left Foot Media. If you enjoyed this show, then please help us to ensure that more of this great content keeps getting made by becoming a patron of our work at patreon.com/leftfootmedia. Link in the show notes. Thanks for listening. See you next time on The Dispatches.